You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Motley Fool Money co-host Dylan Lewis here. If you're listening to us, it's because you love following the stock market and learning about business stories. If you're looking to keep learning and unlock your potential, then you should check out the Think Fast, Talk Smart podcast produced by our friends over at the Stanford Graduate School of Business. Think Fast, Talk Smart is the Webby Award-winning Best Business Podcast that's received nearly 43 million downloads and is the number one career podcast in 95-plus countries, so you know it's worth your time. Each week, host and Stanford lecturer Matt Abraham sits down with experts to discuss the best tips to hone and develop your communication skills, from making small talk that leaves a big impression, to keeping your nerves in check while speaking, to being more persuasive. Whether you're working on your elevator pitch or planning an important meeting, strong communication skills are important in business and life in general. That's why you'll hear from pros like neuroscientist Andrew Huberman on how to manage speaking anxiety, as well as speechwriter, best-selling author, and friend of the Fool, Dan Pink, on how to take risks in your communication, and psychologist Kelly McGonigal on how to harness nervous energy to fuel powerful presentations. All that and so much more available on the Think Fast, Talk Smart podcast. So what are you waiting for? Listen every Tuesday, wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube.
Hey everyone, thanks for joining me today on Her Money. Today we bring you another of our ever popular mailbags. You asked for more, so here they are. We've got calls today from two of our listeners. Anya's joining us from Canada with her question about an investment that is unfortunately not panning out. Then Krista's in the house. She just got a promotion, yay, and is wondering what to do with all that extra cash. But before we jump into your questions, remember during the pandemic when we were all paying more than we should have for new and used cars? Demand was up, supply was down, so buyers were paying well over the manufacturer's suggested retail price, or MSRP, sometimes as much as $10,000 over. Well, now comes the bust. The willingness to pay over MSRP may cost car owners big time, particularly if they need to trade in a vehicle they're still making a payment on, and that turns out to be a lot of people. According to car shopping website Edmunds, nearly half of new car purchases involve a trade-in, and in nearly one in five of those transactions, the owner of the vehicle being traded in was upside down, meaning they owed more on the vehicle than it was worth. Look, this is a scenario you want to avoid. And with new cars having more life in them than they used to, you should be able to. Just know your new car isn't the one your grandparents said would start having problems at 50,000 miles and basically expire at 100,000. Today's cars can go 200,000, 250,000 miles, sometimes more. So plan on keeping your vehicles a little bit longer, if not a lot longer. Just make sure you check all the boxes on maintenance to keep yours on the road. According to a new Redfin analysis, the rate at which home prices grow is slowing down in line with the 0.6% average monthly gain in the roughly 8 years leading up to the COVID pandemic. While it's a positive sign that the housing market has stabilized in terms of price growth, a big difference between the market today and the pre-pandemic period is the relatively low number of people buying and selling, largely due to higher mortgage rates and low supply. While mortgage rates peaked at nearly 8% last year and are coming down, they are still over 6%, making the average home unaffordable for most potential buyers. Still, we've got potentially 3 interest rate reductions coming later this year. So keep looking. You may eventually get your chance. And now we're going to take a quick break. Hey, you guys, it's Jean. I want to tell you about another podcast I think you'll love because I love it. Freakonomics Radio. Every week, host and best-selling author Stephen Dubner dives into the hidden side of business and economics and so much more. He interviews CEOs, historians, even Nobel laureates to explore all kinds of topics like whether AI has a sense of humor and whether 2 CEOs are better than 1. If you are curious like me and just looking to better understand the world around you, you will find it on Freakonomics Radio. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. And we're back with our mailbag. First, we're taking a call from Anya. She's in her mid-30s, is supporting a young family, and recently got into real estate investing. A few years ago, she invested in a pre-construction property, and now that it's getting closer to the closing date, she's hoping to get out of it. Here's our conversation. Hi, Anya. Nice to meet you.
Hi, Jean. Thank you so much for responding to my email. I didn't think I would get a response. I just went out of a limb, and I'm so glad to be here.
It is a complicated scenario, I think, a bit of a complicated question. So let's talk through it. What do you say? Tell me a little bit about you and what's going on in your life that you need help with right now.
Yeah. Okay. So I figured I would give you like a bit of a background. So I recently just moved to Canada. I've been here for like 5 years. So I essentially had to start my career over again. So I don't have that robust retirement savings plan. And I'm in my 30s, right? I'm 36 years old. So I figured it made sense instead of I didn't have the long-term period to start contributing to like a retirement plan. So I figured what made sense was to sort of invest in real estate, especially since we noticed the real estate boom in Canada here. And so what we did was we also were contributing to our retirement savings plan like that we had with our employers. We had the RSP for our kids for the education savings plan. And so we figured any money we had, we kept set aside and we invested in properties. So the first one, we bought our first property in 2021 and then we converted it to a 2-unit home. So essentially, we were able to rent out our basement and live on the top unit, and that way we're able to cash flow. So the whole point is help you with paying your mortgage, and then in the end, you're building equity in the home. So what we did was any other monies we got outside of that with our jobs, we sort of set that aside and invested in pre-construction. So that's like the main problem of the day, right? Is that we invested in a pre-construction property. Essentially, the builder would, you pay some money up front. It was staggered payment. So within the space of 1 year, we put in $210,000 into the unit. And now the property is closing in January. And so essentially the problem is we didn't think, you know, usually in the contract, you get first tentative closing date, second closing date, third closing date. So essentially the property could close in any on any of those dates that they presented. So we knew the closing would come, but we just figured, you know, it probably won't be ready with the COVID and the stress in building and all of that. So now we've been informed the property is closing and then we have to come up with the outstanding 10%. And all of that. But the problem we're facing now is because the home value prices have crashed. So we bought the property at 1.5. And now with the valuation, with the real estate market, everything, high interest rates, the property is now worth 1.2 million. So we have that shortfall of 300,000. So the problem is, do we use all our savings, plummet more back into debt to try and close that transaction with the hopes of maybe the real estate market rebounds and we're able to sort of do what we did in the first property, renovate the basement, rent it out, live in the top unit. That's the whole model. So we were wondering whether it made sense to sort of do that, get into debt to secure the closing because of the shortfall we have now. And then, or should we just walk away? That's essentially what the problem is now.
Oh boy, this is a tough one. So first of all, I'm not Canadian and I am not a lawyer. But let me just make sure I understand. You put down $200,000 on this property that you bought for $1.5 million. And now at closing, you have to come up with the other $1.3 million, is that right? Or you have to come up with a progress payment of $300,000?
So essentially, the way it works is if you're buying a property, you have to put down a down payment, right, which is usually 20% of the value of the home. So the builder, when you're working with pre-construction, you have to put 10% down just to show your commitment level. Then you secure funding, usually using a mortgage for the outstanding amount. So you bring the 10% for closing while you're supposed to source funding from a bank for the shortfall of 1.2 in this case, right? Because if you do 20% of 1.5, you're looking at paying down like 300 and something thousand, right? So we're supposed to pay, ideally in a perfect world, the valuation was the same, we're supposed to be coming up with like 115,000 plus closing costs, lawyer fees, all of that to close. And then the bank would essentially be giving you the 1.2, which is the outstanding to close using a mortgage, right?
Got it.
Yeah.
Is this property part of a community? Is this builder building a number of things simultaneously?
Yes. So it's supposed to be a new community in an up and coming neighborhood in Ontario, right? So it's going to be different, almost like how you would see a gated community, different properties, like a street. You have like the corner lot. And at the time, I don't know what we're thinking. We got the biggest property size and all of that just because we thought, okay, it'll be more room. You'll be able to rent out the basement once you're able to fix it up. So we had that as part of our plan, right?
And do you know what is happening with the other people who are in the same situation as you are? I'm asking because you're not alone, right? I mean, it's clear to me that other people bought at the same time. Real estate market was at a height. It definitely has contracted. It is not necessarily expected to go back to where it was. You know, if you look at real estate forecasts, things are predicted to hold steady a little bit as interest rates come down. Property values should go up a bit. But I'm wondering if this builder is willing to renegotiate at all.
Well, we tried to contact the builder to see if we could get something called an abatement, essentially where they would give you a discount based on the fact that the market has sort of come down, everything has dipped. But they're saying, no, if the rules were reversed and the price of the property had gone up, then nobody's going to come to the builder and say, I'm sorry, I paid 1.2 and now it's 1.5, right? So they sort of flipped the argument. And what they're saying now is they're going, hoping to offer something. If you are unable to secure financing, the plan B is essentially you're going to get like a builder mortgage. So the builder is not a bank, but what they're going to do is they'll front you the money for a period of 1 year in the hopes that the market sort of stabilizes. And then you would then have to transfer the mortgage to like a proper financial institution after the 1 year period. But obviously that comes at a high cost because you're going to pay fees, high interest rates. It's going to be higher than what the conventional banks would offer, right? So it's like a last resort just so you can close the transaction, but it's not like the first choice, right?
Yeah, definitely. Often when people are cash flowing properties, they are part of a real estate investing community. Are you part of a real estate investing community?
Not really. We've been watching, well, like the do-it-yourself kind of people, right? There's a lot of information out there, right? So we've just been watching, listening, reading. And so we decided it makes sense to sort of, you know, have that model, right? Just to fast track our retirement. Like I said, we're already almost in our 40s, right? So you're thinking what's the best way you can reach your goals without having to contribute every month and for an extended period of time. So that's what we were thinking.
Are you aiming to retire young?
Not necessarily. I think for us, the ideal age of retirement would be like mid-50s, but you don't want that pressure of, you know, going into retirement and having to work a 9-to-5 job. Like, we would like the flexibility to sort of, you know, take on a scaled back role in our careers, right? And then really focus on real estate. That's like the end goal, is to have multiple properties and be able to do this model.
So here's what was most surprising to me about your story. The fact that at 36 years old, you feel like you're behind. I think at 36 years old, yes, would we all have liked to really start saving for retirement in our 20s? 100%. How many of us actually do it? Very few in any sort of a meaningful way. And 30s is so much better than 40s, right? It's so much better than 50s. And you're not even close to 40. Like 36, that's squarely mid-30s. So in my mind, you've got a ton of time, right? And maybe you will still be working in your 50s. And maybe your perception of wanting to work by the time you're in your mid-50s will have shifted a little bit. I'm 59. I'm going to be 60 this year. I can't even believe that I'm saying that, let alone saying it out loud. But I don't want to stop working, in part because I don't know what I would do with myself. You know, I think that as we get older and realize that this quote unquote retirement could last 30 plus years, you know, that's an awfully long time to be involved in actively not doing something. Look, I think real estate is great. And I think that the way that you approached your first property, you're getting value out of living it, you're in it, you're covering your mortgage. I mean, you're building equity. I would sort of slow it down with the real estate and try to replicate what you already did with the first property by buying something that has a proven history of being able to use the income to cover the mortgage. This world of pre-construction, you know, quite frankly, I'm not your best expert on that. But I do think that I would talk to lenders. I would see if maybe there is a way. I mean, perhaps there's a way for you to flip this, that somebody else wants to take on the risk. You would lose some money, yes, but maybe you can get out of it with more of a modest loss. To me, it feels a little too risky to allow it to force you to not just shove a lot of money into a diversified retirement portfolio going forward. I think you need both, right? I think if you can continue to really save for retirement, along with buying some rental properties that will create an income, when you get into your 50s, those rental properties can be your phase two. You can be a landlord and you can manage those properties, and that will provide you with an income that will replace the income, hopefully, that you are giving up when you sort of scale it back a little bit. But I also think that you need the cash that is going to sit in those retirement plans to help support you as well. Have you spoken with a real estate attorney about what is happening? It sounds like we're coming up on this closing, right? You have to make a decision about what you're going to do. Have you talked to an attorney about if there's a way to get out of this?
Yeah, so I did. That was like my first point of call. Being a lawyer myself, I actually reviewed the agreement and I spoke to a real estate attorney, right? And then we came down to the point that it's a contract, right? So you signed up, they've delivered their end, you have to deliver your end, right? So what we're potentially thinking, what we're leaning towards is trying to just hustle up and then just close it and then see if we can hold on to it until the market sort of goes up or stabilizes to a point where we can take a modest loss, like even if we sold it at that point. But nobody's looking to take this off our hands now, right? Even though we canvassed like brokers to see if anybody would be willing to sort of, we could assign the property now before it closes and someone takes over the liabilities and, you know, every other thing. But then because of the high interest rates, we're not going to find any takers this close to the line, right? So we've been advised, just talking to people and all of that and doing some research, it may make sense for us to sadly like take the hit and try and close this. And then once we close this, see how we can make the best of it for the 1 year, like we're giving ourselves the year. And if things don't stabilize, then we'll see if we can just sell it and take our loss. Because I take your point. And with the whole getting older, I don't know, maybe it's like, I'm sure if I spoke to a therapist, they'll find something in my past or something that's making me feel like I have not much time. And I sort of want to realize this whole saving towards retirement, because not like I don't want to work when I'm older. It's just I don't want to be so dependent on like a job to be able to do basic things like pay my bills and all of that. So that's where the drive is coming from, is setting myself up now so that even though I can work, I don't have to work, right? Like, yeah.
I get it. And I think real estate provides that, right? I think maybe this particular property, because it was so risky, didn't. And I understand why you went for it, right? There's been such short supply on the market, right? There's just been nothing to buy. So you were looking for something to buy. You couldn't find something to buy. You bought something that wasn't yet built. And then the market turned. And maybe it will come back. I bought a home in New York, in the suburbs of New York, in 2005, right as the market hit its heights, right before the real estate bubble burst. I never thought I would get my money out of that property, but I sold it in the middle of the pandemic, and I came out slightly ahead. You know, it took 15 years. You may not want to wait that long, but I think what you're planning is a good thing. I think you've got, you know, you sort of have outlined steps to get you from here to there. You guys, I assume, make a pretty good income that'll keep you afloat as you go through this process.
Yeah, it's going to be tight, but I guess it's, you have to do what you have to do, right? At this point, because you don't want to risk being sued. I think the worst thing is being sued and then having to still come up with some money and then not taking the benefit of owning the property in the end. So it just looks like the best option would be to just try and close it. And then hopefully we don't have to wait 15 years to be able to upload it.
And if you're unable to close it, you know, maybe they'll work with you a little more than even they're saying that they'll work with you. I wouldn't hesitate to put pressure on the builder to really come to the table with some concessions. I would bet that there are a lot of people who are asking for concessions right now.
I think so too. And that's why we have come up with the whole builder mortgage thing.
And sometimes you have to ask more than once and just tell them what you're not able to do in order to get them to capitulate a little bit. Will you keep me posted?
I definitely will. But it sounds like you're saying keep saving in your retirement
plan. I am. I'm saying keep saving in your retirement plan because I think, you know, we're living through a very tight real estate market now where everything is selling. But there have been periods where things sit. And there have been periods where people want to buy and they don't want to rent, right? And you don't want, you want diversification. And even though you have properties, you want some stocks, you want some bonds, you want some cash as well.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you so much for just talking through it with me, right? And making me almost like validating where I was heading, but then also reminding me I still need to make sure I put some money aside in my respective pension plans.
Absolutely. And now we're going to take a quick break. Let's talk retirement, shall we? Did you know that women are more likely to outlive our retirement savings than men are? That's why having consistent income, a paycheck for life, in addition to Social Security, can be a real game changer. That's where annuities come in. If you're not familiar with annuities, the concept is essentially that you take a chunk of money and turn it into a paycheck that you can start drawing on when you want to, next year or next decade. The ParityFlex multi-year guaranteed annuity available from Gainbridge offers an impressive 5.95% APY long-term, but it also offers flexible withdrawals for unexpected expenses. The ParityFlex multi-year guaranteed annuity can be an important part of your financial future as you work to build a retirement you love. Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Please visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for important information. This is a paid endorsement. Hey, everybody, it's Jean. If you want to continue unlocking your potential, then you should also check out Think Fast, Talk Smart, produced by our friends at Stanford Graduate School of Business. Think Fast, Talk Smart is the Webby Award-winning best business podcast that received nearly 50 million downloads. It's the number one career podcast in 95 countries, so you know it's worth your time. Each week, host and Stanford lecturer Matt Abraham sits down with experts to discuss the best tips to hone and develop your communication skills, from making small talk that leaves a big impression to keeping your nerves in check while speaking to being more persuasive. Whether you're working on your elevator pitch or planning an important meeting, strong communication skills are critical to business. All that and so much more is available on Think Fast, Talk Smart. Listen every Tuesday wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube. We are back with Krista. She is 31, lives in Brooklyn, and is wondering how to strategically manage her finances for her short and long-term goals after a big career change and a big raise. Here she is. Hey, Krista.
Hi, Jean. How are you?
I'm good. I'm fine. How you doing?
It's great. It's a Friday.
I know. I'm so happy that it's a Friday. It's a Friday. Bonus. It's a Friday with a Monday holiday.
Oh, yes. Even better, a long weekend.
Exactly. Tell me what's on your mind.
Yeah. So I'm calling in today because I recently had a career change. And with that change has come a higher compensation. I feel like for the first time in my life, I actually have the ability to save and move money around and make more strategic decisions about how I want to be saving for my future. And I feel like I have all the right places for the money to go, and I'm just not quite sure how to be moving it there. So that's why I'm calling in and would love to have a conversation about that.
Amazing. First of all, congratulations. What were you doing and what are you doing now?
I was previously working in fashion. Mm-hmm. And I have just moved over into the tech world.
Ah, no wonder you got a bump in salary.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Tell me about your goals. We try to set up the accounts so that they service the goals, right? We're looking for specific outcomes. So let's start with the goals and then we'll talk about where you're putting the money.
Yeah. So long-term goals, obviously saving for retirement, as well as potentially buying a home in the future. And then short-term, I am saving for a wedding also.
Congratulations.
Thank you. That would hopefully be in the next 3 to 5 years. And it's something that my partner and I have sat down and talked about and established savings goals. So short-term and long-term goals I have laid out, and I have the funds set up to start funding those, but just trying to find the most tax-advantaged and, you know, optimal way to be using the different accounts that I have.
Okay. At work, do you have a retirement account?
Yes. And okay. I'm hoping to max that out for the first time this year.
Fantastic. Are you able to do more beyond maxing out your 401k?
There is a Roth option that I am looking. I'm actually working with the institution that my 401k is with at work now. I don't entirely understand that option, but it's something that I have started contributing a smaller additional percentage to.
How old are you?
I'm 31.
Okay. So putting some money into the Roth option is probably a really good idea. Anybody who thinks that their tax rate will be higher in the future than it is right now benefits from a Roth, because you pay taxes on that money at today's rate, and then you are able to withdraw in the future and not pay taxes down the road. You don't necessarily want to do it if it's going to prevent you from being able to contribute as much as you could, right? So if the tax benefits of contributing to the traditional account are adding to your ability to max out your contribution, then I would say go traditional. But if you can do the Roth, at least for part of it, I would absolutely do that. And maybe look at splitting it 50-50. In terms of your other goals, the house and the wedding, that money doesn't go into retirement. So when we look at what's left on the side, how much are you freeing up?
on a monthly basis or a paycheck basis? And where are you putting that money right now?
So that is one thing I have to start automating as savings, because I don't have a set amount per month. I'm kind of just moving over the excess that I have after all the bills are paid. It's usually around $1,000 to $2,000 a month that I have excess that I can put into them. I have a high yield savings account as well as an investment account with Betterment that I place both of those into. And then when it comes to the house, that's kind of something that we're looking at. With my offer, I do have RSUs. Mm-hmm. If I stay at my company for around 4 years, I will have them fully vested. And that could be potentially a down payment for a house also.
Yeah, that's a great way to fund a down payment, maybe even more, depending on how your company stock is doing. RSUs are restricted stock, essentially, that if you work for a company that offers them, you're able to buy stock at a discounted price, basically, and then sell it and use the money to fund another goal. So I have friends who've used RSUs to pay for down payments, to pay for college. RSUs can be great for college. They're nice when you need chunks of cash for particular things. And you can, in the future, if you decide to stay with this company or in tech where they tend to offer them, you can use them for other things as well. So I like that goal as long as you like what you're doing. Do you like your new job?
Yeah, I do. I'm someone who kind of thrives on continuous learning, and it's a huge change for me. I have a lot to learn. So I've really enjoyed learning all the new functions of the role. And it is a little bit similar to what I was doing in fashion in some ways. One other part of my question is that I do have a little bit remaining in student loans. They have a low interest rate, anywhere from 3.5 to 4.4% on the 8 loans. But I have the high yield savings account, which is actually out earning the interest that I would be owing on the student loans. That's something that I looked into. Do I just pay it and just not have to worry about it? Do I leave it there and make the monthly payment? That's something that I kind of wanted to get advice about, because it's just under $11,000. It's not super detrimental to my finances. I can make the monthly payment. Or do I just pay that off and not have it, worry about it?
How much longer do you have on your student loan clock?
Based on when I started making payments, a year and a half, I believe.
I'm assuming that you are not getting a deduction on the student loan interest on your taxes, right, at this point?
No.
Okay. So you are paying taxes on the money that you're earning in a high-yield savings account, which basically cuts the 4.5% that you're earning probably down to closer to 3%, which is exactly what you are getting. So if you want the cash for emergencies or other things, how cash flush are you right now?
So in my high yield, I have $23,000 currently. I keep a traditional checking and savings account around $3,000 to $4,000 every month just to pay for rent and other bills, other expenses. And then I have a separate high yield account, which is for my emergency fund, that has close to $5,500 in it. And then another investment fund that is not restricted on when I can move the cash out of it.
Is that your Betterment account?
Yeah.
And how much is in the Betterment account?
It's close to $18,000.
And how much does it cost you to live? What's your monthly not fixed expenses?
So we're really lucky. We did not have any rent increases due to COVID. Right now, I'd say my monthly expenses are just under $3,000.
Oh boy, living in New York City, that's amazing. Last question. How would it feel to pay off the student loans? And how does it feel to be carrying them month to month?
It doesn't really weigh on me. My monthly payment is around $215. I think personally, I'd rather see the high yield grow rather than reduce that by over $10,000 and have to work my way back up to that amount. But I maybe it would feel good just to have it over with.
So the math isn't working for me in my head. If you are paying $200, I don't get how you'll be out of these in 2 years. And I think maybe because of the student loan pause, you need to add another couple of years to your clock, which probably means you're going to be paying this for 4 years. But I would say just keep paying it on the clock that you've got. You have a little more flexibility to move and to maneuver. If you get a bonus at the end of the year and you want to get rid of them, get rid of them. But you've got these goals set up. You know that you can keep moving money into savings that will help you get ahead on your goal of a wedding. I would figure out how much that's likely to cost you so that you have something to actually reach for. And the same is true when it comes to buying a house. Figure out, you know, what kind of house you're talking about, what it's going to look like, how much you'll contribute, how much your partner will contribute, when you want to buy that house. And at $200 a month, put it on automatic and just let it go. But I would encourage you to set up some other automatic transfers to savings. I admire the fact that you're sweeping the money out of checking and into savings every single month. That's a habit that we actually encourage people who are in our Finance Fix program to do on a weekly basis, because we know that if the money just sits in checking, it screams that it is money that's there to be spent. And the fact that you're already doing it is good, but put it on automatic. Make sure it's going to continue to happen. Look, you sound like you're doing great. How much do you have in retirement right now?
That is one goal that I think I need to work on. I have, between my two accounts, I have around 50,000. And I've had other factors, like I've worked for companies that don't match or don't, you're not eligible to match for a certain number of months or years. I was previously laid off for almost a year, so I wasn't contributing there. So at my age, I know that I should have about 1 year's salary, and I'm not there yet. So that is my number one focus for 2024.
Okay. Well, it sounds like you're doing it, right? You've already bumped up your contribution so that you will max out, I assume?
Yes.
Okay. You're on the road. And you'll see, look, those benchmarks that we set out, that you should have about one time salary by the time you're 30 and three times by the time you're 40, you're going to make tremendous headway on that first benchmark this year, next year. Hopefully you get some market growth that supplements it. But I think you're doing great. If you were looking for some recognition that you're doing it all right, you're getting it from me. I think you're absolutely heading in the right direction.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it's been a lot of hard work, a lot of sitting, crunching the numbers, and having the conversations with my partner about our life goals. So I'm really happy to be where I am. I just wasn't quite sure of the direction. And I feel more led down the right path after this conversation. So thank you.
Oh, you are very welcome. Thanks for being part of our community. And if you have any other questions, just let me know.
Thank you, Jean.
Thank you so much for joining me today on Her Money. If you like what you hear, please subscribe to our show at Apple Podcasts. Leave us a review. We love hearing what you think. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Edelman Financial Engines. Her Money is produced by Haley Pascalides. This show is mixed and mastered by CDM Sound Studios. Our music is provided by Video Helper, and our show comes to you through Megaphone. Check out our new podcast, How She Does It with Karen Feinerman, for intimate cocktail party style conversations with today's most talented female leaders. This podcast is also part of the Airwave Media Podcast Network. You can find us and other shows like us at airwavemedia.com. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk soon.